There's something outside.
What is that?
Radio.
Indeed, it is Monster X Radio, and they are the sponsors of On the Shoulders of Giants, Talking Old Timers with Thomas Steinberg, and this will be our 21st show, Thomas and I, and I want to welcome Thomas back into the studio. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Julie. I'm doing just fine. Hey, I see you've gotten back to your original intro music. It caught me off guard last time because it changed.
Yeah, I know, and I accidentally hit the wrong button. oh, help me, Lord. So how's things going in Canada there, Thomas?
Well, we're going through some pretty nice weather, dry conditions right now, still under the COVID nonsense, of course. I understand you're having rather a stormy night tonight.
Yeah, we've been having, here in North Carolina, we had the hurricane, I don't know how many days ago now it's been, a week and a half or so ago. So we had a hurricane that produced tornadoes and tore up a whole lot of stuff on our East Coast. People died. Very tragic.
Oh, man.
And then a week later, we had an earthquake that shook our house. And you could feel it all the way to
that.
Yeah, it went all the way from the west side of North Carolina all the way over to the east side. People who had just gone through the hurricanes felt the earthquake. So it was like, really? Welcome to North Carolina, I guess, right?
You think the Sasquatch gods are trying to tell you something?
Yeah, definitely. But I'll tell you, it's been a heck of a ride here lately with this weather. And we went through, 10 days of 95-plus degrees into the three-digit number heat index. And the lowest it got at night was 80. And, I mean, it was just like the porch of Hades here, you know. And but it's starting to cool down a little bit. I think we made it to 86 today, so that's good. But we do have some more storms rolling in, and it looks like it'll be raining for three more solid days. We can't catch a break. But that's all right. I mean, all I can say is that we have mild winters, and I hang on to that. Tooth and nail. Hang on to that. So... Well, I'll tell you what, listeners, we appreciate you tuning in. As always, we really appreciate your support and your positive feedback. What we're going to talk about tonight is somewhat controversial, depending on who you ask. And there's some listeners who may not be familiar with Paul Freeman and the history of Paul Freeman and how it came to be that many people in the community referred to him as a hoaxer. We're going to go over the good, the bad, and the ugly about his contributions and how everything went down, because some people may, hear people refer to Paul Freeman in the community and not know exactly what they're talking about. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to jump in there, and I know that Thomas has a lot of information, insight into this whole situation. Thomas, if you want to bring me back in time to when he first made his entry into the Bigfoot community and what that was all about.
Okay, what can I say about old Paul? Paul Freeman. You've heard me use the term Ivan Mark syndrome.
Yes.
Well, I hate to say it, but in my opinion today of the late Paul Freeman was he was a classic example of exactly that. Now, Paul Freeman first came into attention into the Sasquatch community when he reported an encounter while he was working as a watershed patrolman for the Forestry Service near the Walla Walla, Washington area, when on June the 10th, 1982, while doing his patrols, he basically drove around in a four-wheel drive checking gates and fences and things like that. He reported a close encounter with a Sasquatch that he said, basically at the time, said scared the hell out of him. He was close enough to it, he could see the neck on its back stand up, and they just sort of stared at each other, went off, and Paul Freeman came started to become well known around that time.
Okay.
Paul Freeman.
And now, when he, where was this at where he had that first encounter? What was it, a particular mountains or a forest?
I'm not sure what exactly. I think they're called the Blue Mountains. They're referred to the Blue Mountains because there's always seems to be in hot days a sort of a blue haze over the things. It's not pollution or anything. It's just an atmospheric effect. So they're known as the Blue Mountains. And on June 10th, 1982, Freeman was approaching one of the gates for what was, you know, protecting a reservoir of a water supply. I'm not sure if it was a water supply for Walla Walla itself or one of the other communities near there, when he encountered a so-called Sasquatch. Now, Paul Freeman, as a human being, well, let me put it to you this way. If the world was full of Paul Freemans, the world would be a much better place. Personality-wise, as a human being, I never really knew a nicer guy than Paul Freeman. He was
spent time with Paul
kind of guy who would take the shirt off his back for you, you know? And when he had this encounter, he gained a lot of publicity and a lot of attention, and quite frankly, at the time, I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. I believed him wholeheartedly. And it wasn't until many months later, and I defended Paul Freeman because I just didn't think this man would make something like this up. But of course,
I
was
the original sighting of 82.
Yeah, correct. And
okay.
And, of course, through time, he started finding footprints here, finding footprints there. Grover Cranch, the late Grover Cranch, was very impressed with some tracks that he found. And that's when Grover thought he found, first time he detected what we all call dermal ridges in some of Paul Freeman's footprints and things like that. And I think Jeff Meldrum is very impressed with, and still to this day is very impressed with a lot of Freeman's footprint claims and findings. And I gotta admit, Meldrum's had me scratching my head on some of his footprints too. But the simple fact is, I was very close to, of course, as you know, back then, the late Rennie DeHinn and I were good friends and colleagues, and Rennie kept telling me, look, go talk to Arden and people like that, people Freeman worked with and worked for, and you'll learn things. So I did. And this is, of course, around the time of, 1992, when he got his famous footage of, ooh, there he goes.
That was off the Blue Mountains.
You know, it was down in Oregon, just across the line. It was in an area, as I recall, D. Spring, Oregon. It's just south of the border. A lot of people say it's in Washington, but it's just across the line, so you really can't blame people for making that mistake. You know, like the border between Washington and Oregon goes right through that area. And it was in D. Springs in Oregon, and that happened on August 20th, 1992, 10 years after he first became well-known for his first sighting. But I went and talked to Arden and the people he worked with down in Walla Walla, and they told me that Paul Freeman had Sasquatch on the brain from the first, and that's all he talked about from the first day he started that job. And he said, I've had people doing Freeman's job for years and never reported a thing. And sure enough, Paul Freeman comes out. Within a couple of days of doing the job, he encounters a Sasquatch. Well, to me, that was a red flag. And I started, and Paul Freeman and I were not friends, but we knew each other. And I would, matter of fact, the last time I talked to Paul was in a coffee shop near Seattle, Washington, just about, a few months before he died. The first thing he said to me when I walked up to him was, you're not going to grill me again, Thomas. I said, you bet I am. He says, oh, darn.
Oh, no.
It's like I said, as a human being, you couldn't ask for a better one. But for some reason on this subject, I am convinced now he was a total sufferer of Ivan Mark syndrome. Yeah. In my opinion.
You can explain that Ivan Mark syndrome to folks who may not understand what you're referring to.
Well, Ivan Mark syndrome is based, I named it after the first example this I ever knew, Ivan Marks, who was involved with the Bosberg Crippled Prince in 1969, which could be true, but Ivan Marks was a Class A, put it politely, bullshit artist, and he would tell, spin tales and tell stories and God knows how many Sasquatch encounters, and it's like I said, publicity does strange things to some people, and what I refer to as Ivan Mark syndrome is usually applies to someone who refers themselves as a researcher who may have crossed something authentic the first time, is the center of attention for a while, but when that attention dies down, it becomes obvious the attention was more important than the subject, so they start hoaxing stuff to remain the center of attention, hoping to come across real authentic stuff in the meantime, right? And it works for them until they get caught. Yeah, it works for them until they get caught, yeah.
Now, I saw an interview that Paul Freeman was talking to Good Morning America, actually. And he had said that, you know, and I'm just being the devil's advocate here, Paul Freeman said that he had faked prints to fool some of his friends, but that the ones that he brought forward to be examined to like Grover, Krantz, and Meldrum were legit. How much do you know about that particular claim where you know, he was fooling friends? Was that something that people knew about?
Well, it was basically because people like Renee and stuff were talking to his friends, and they were kind of like saying, oh, no, come on, you can't be falling for this nonsense. So Paul Freeman sort of like to sort of cover up started adjusting his stories. It's like that's one of the first giveaways when someone is continuously hoaxing. When you point something out that doesn't make sense, if it, they start adjusting their stories to try to explain away the criticism.
Okay, so that's all right. So, and he made a cast of those 82 tracks at the watershed, right?
No, in 82, there weren't too many prints found. He started finding prints after that. The 82 incident of June the 10th, 1982, was the sighting of the creature itself.
Okay, that's right. That was the sighting of the creature itself. Then he started looking for evidence that they existed
And, of course, getting involved in what he started reading and things and finding out about twisted trees and things like that. So he started producing twisted tree branches here and there and stuff like that and hair and finding hair. And I believe some of his hair was examined and turned out to be off of a Barbie doll or something like that. It wasn't even real hair. And you know, and he would just explain that as a way. Well, he said someone fooled me because I thought it was real and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Mhm.
So now the first, when were the tracks that Krantz swore by God and showed dermal ridges in it. Do you remember, was that in the 90s? Was that the 92 tracks?
I believe so, and several before that as well. Don't remember the exact dates of those track findings, but Grover Kratz is very impressed with them because he thought he could detect what he would call dermal ridges in them. And he didn't think they could be
so
fake.
Grover Kratz, Grover Kratz.
Yeah, and even before that, Freeman produced tracks, a track with a stone in the middle of it, and there was enough cushion in the track bank it appeared the foot absorbed the impact of the stone, was able to embed in the ground on both sides of the stone, and he didn't think that one could have happened. I think a lot of cases, and Meldrum's got me shaking my head, maybe Paul did find authentic prints on one or two occasions, but he definitely went out and faked a lot of them as well. And he would painstakingly, in my opinion, because of course I wasn't spying on him, he was digging out by hand intentionally.
Okay.
At least in my opinion. But it's quite possible that some of Freeman's footprints may have been authentic because Freeman did go out in the bush and he did look.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time out there in the bush.
Absolutely.
I know that. I read up him, and a lot of the people back in that day were giving him that. You know, it's like, yeah, he has spent tons of time out there. And for some people who may not be familiar with who Dr. Grover Kratz was, he was an associate professor of anthropology at Washington State University at Pullman. He said the prints showed skin patterns known as the dermal ridges, and he believed they belonged to a higher primate, but not an ape or a human. And Kratz is also, he was also a member of the International Society of Cryptozoology, and I believe they met at the University of British Columbia, didn't they?
Well, we had one big conference down in 1989 in Pullman, Washington. The International Society of Cryptozoology was started by the late Richard Greenwell, and it sort of went under when Richard and Dr. Kratz passed away. I was also a member.
Okay.
Yeah, and we had the real big conference there in 1989 in the University of Washington State in Pullman, and Paul Freeman was there showing one of his videos or film, and it turned into a circus because Paul Freeman was a good friend of the late Eric Bechtard, who was a notorious hoaxer and just strange person. And I think it was a fellow from Minnesota named Mark Francis had Bechtard arrested for threatening him while all this was going on. And later on, we were all gathered around in a circle, and Freeman was telling his story again, and I was there. John Green was there. Bob Tipton was there. Freeman was there, and a handful of other people, and Freeman said something, and Tipton just shook his head, took a few paces back in the sky, and he turned around and said, "God damn it, Paul, you change your damn story every time." And of course, Green was, "Gee whiz, Bob, come on, Bob, why are you saying that?" That was the first and only time I ever saw Bob Titmus get mad.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, it was.
That's crazy. Because it shows that there's always been tomfoolery in the Bigfoot community. It's not a new thing, people. it's from the beginning.
Yeah.
Grant's actually told a press conference one time that the cast may be the best set of prints of a Sasquatch ever obtained. And that was referring to, I'm not sure which ones he was referring to, but I think it was the one that Kratz believed had the dermal ridges and different things. And Kratz was sold. He was absolutely sold that at least the prints he was referring to were absolutely Sasquatch prints.
It's one
so
of the main reasons.
We agree that perhaps there were those real prints of an unknown creature that he presented to Kratz that could have very well been what we call Sasquatch creature.
Possibly, but also Paul Freeman was very good at digging things, and he may have achieved some certain effects unintentionally that fooled Grover Krantz.
And
we don't know.
Mean?
Well, you know, digging a print out of the ground and shaping it with your hand, you're going to get your fingerprints in the bottom of those prints sometimes and make little lines here and there that could be mistaken for dermal ridges. And, of course, it was discovered, oh, his name's gone right out of my head. He did a presentation at a conference about 10 years ago explaining how when you pour plaster Paris sometimes, if it's not mixed well enough, it makes these little lines as it dries that resemble dermal ridges.
Oh, okay.
So we don't know.
Well, there's another.
Freeman has told me things about some of Freeman's tracks that got me scratching my head on them, too. And it's quite possible, yes, I'll admit, that maybe Paul Freeman, while he was suffering from Ivan Mark syndrome, may have once or twice come across possible authentic tracks somewhere, but I don't know. But I do believe that he did fake a lot of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so we have people
my
on
opinion.
Both sides on that.
Yeah.
And that's your opinion. And also Dehendon and Tip also shared your opinion.
Yeah.
I was reading up on this about a, who was it? There was a tracker named Joel Harden. Do you remember that name?
You mean Harden?
Joel Harden. He first analyzed prints, and he pronounced them fakes for the U.S. Forestry Service's officials who actually flew him into the Mill Creek watershed in the forestry's private plane from Idaho. And
Joel,
I guess
I talked
Joel
to him.
Was an actual tracker.
And as far as he was concerned, the prints were fake.
Krantz never did interview him, from what I understand.
No. As a matter of fact, one of the main reasons Rene was so hostile to Krantz was because of Krantz's insistence that Freeman's evidence was authentic, and Rene just thought he was just being gullible and was too proud to admit it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so now Krantz did say that and this is a quote from him, the top fingerprint experts in the United States have looked at them and say they are not faked, and they are definitely from a higher primate, unquote. Now, did Krantz ever cite his sources of these top fingerprint experts that you're aware of?
As far as I know, no, he did not.
Okay. All right, because I delved deep into this one, and I could not find any particular references to exact names of these top fingerprint experts that he was referring to. So,
and I believe Jimmy Chilcott was one of them, but he might have been. I don't know.
It's amazing how there's so there's both sides of the fence on this. It just amazes me how you have Dr. Grover Krantz, who swears by God that those are the real deal. And then here's what Dehendon said about the tracks. And this is a quote straight from Dehendon. He says, you can fool people, but you can't fool animals. I don't have a PhD. I just use horse sense when I investigate these things. And I can hear him saying that in that voice of his.
Yeah. Krantz is just being goddamn gullible. But ready.
Oh my God! It's amazing how much people just don't understand unless you delve into the history of how all of this started. There's been aggravation from day one, really.
Correct.
Move into his 1994 film. And that was actually, that was recorded in the Blue Mountains at the Oregon-Washington border, right?
Are you talking about the There He Goes video.
Yes, the There He Goes film.
It was actually filmed at Detox Springs, Oregon, I believe.
Okay,
and by the way,
a
lot of things are saying it was 1994. It was actually 1992.
Was it? Because, yeah, I saw, you know what? I am glad you brought that up because I was scratching my head earlier. I had originally thought it was 92, and then I started reading some different things on the internet, and it came out. It was 94 Blue Mountains, Oregon, Washington border. And I was like, well, how come I haven't seen that before? So maybe it was just the source. But you're saying it was actually in 92 when he recorded what he believed to be a Sasquatch creature. And weren't there more than one Sasquatch creature involved in this film, according to his opinion?
It was August 20th, 1992, when he claimed to have videotaped that large Sasquatch walking right to left, and when he followed it, he got a glimpse of it again, and it appeared to be picking something up that some people say was a young Sasquatch because they thought they could see legs dangling in it.
Okay.
You're right.
And was there ever a second Sasquatch besides
the
smaller one?
That was the second video that year Paul Freeman claimed to have made. He also claimed to have made one which we don't know much about, and I think I saw it once. I've never seen it again. That was in April 14th, 1992, which is just a figure in the distance. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what is it about that particular – because I've looked at that film many times. I've even looked at different people who have analyzed it. They've stabilized it. They've enhanced it. They've – you know, gone forwards, backwards, and in between with this. And again, it depends on who you ask. But they did a comparison of the outline of this particular subject in Freeman's video to Patty. Now, have you seen that comparison?
I've seen a lot of things done with that video.
What do you think about the comparison of that to the Patty or the Gimlin Patterson film from October 67? What do you think about the comparison of those two particular subjects? Do you think that it falls short?
Definitely. Do you want me to give you my personal opinion of that footage?
Yes, I do want you to. And
I'll
this is just
blankly and to the point. I think the figure, and I can't prove this, but it's just my theory and my opinion. I think the figure in the film is about Paul Freeman's son, Dwayne, who is a real big man, just like Paul is, wearing a suit.
Wearing a suit, okay. And now I noticed that in the. Almost at the very beginning when the creature first, or the subject, first comes into play, it walks past this a fir tree. And its right arm brushes against this fir tree as it goes by. I was wondering if you had ever heard of or knew of, did they go back and do a comparison video shot?
No, as far as I know, none of that was done until it was tried years later. And, of course, by then the area had changed so much, you almost didn't recognize it.
So no one thought it would be a good idea to go back and do a comparison shot of take a person
There was really not much follow-up on Freeman's video at all at the time. Remember, for the first number of years, like almost 8 years, he really didn't reveal where it was shot.
Okay. And that can be
a lot of red flags, too.
Some people don't want to reveal where they film something because they don't want everybody running over there and messing up the area. And then there's another reason that they may not reveal that information.
They don't want people into it too carefully.
Right. So, but when I was thinking about that today, and I'm like, I'll tell you what, by God, if it was me filming an actual creature, I can't even imagine what it would be like, but if I'm filming an actual creature and all that happened, the very first thing I'm going to do is the very next day I'm going to run back there with somebody that, you know, we can say, okay, you know, for example, Thomas is 6 feet tall, and Thomas is going to walk in the exact line that this particular subject did along beside that fir tree, and we're going to compare how big it looks against the fir tree. That's just me saying that's what I would have done first before I even showed anybody the thing.
Yeah. And by the way, thank you for thinking I'm 6 feet tall. I wish I was.
Thomas is 6 feet tall, everybody. Just remember that. But, I mean, seriously, wouldn't you want to do some comparison things like they did do?
Oh, absolutely. Every position of the filmmaker and where the subject was would be marked, staked, measured, backwards, forwards, everywhere you can think of, and that's what should be done.
And did anybody ever point blank ask him why that was not done?
Yeah, decades later.
Decades later. So it took him a while before he even showed anybody the footage.
And it took even longer for him to reveal where it was.
Okay.
I remember at the time, in 1992, it was one of two videos he was promoting, and was a little time before that, he took alleged, with his son Dwayne, alleged still photos of a Sasquatch, again in the Blue Mountain regions. The still photos turned out, but he had an old-fashioned 60-millimeter movie camera with him and claimed that the film didn't work, so he didn't get any footage of it. But those still photographs is obviously probably someone in a suit, probably the same suit.
And looking at that suit for the year 92, it wouldn't be a far stretch to say that a suit like that could have been obtained for that particular time frame.
It may be. I'm completely wrong. And Paul Freeman did film a Sasquatch that day, and it's just all his Ivan Mark syndrome claims that have clouded my judgment on the whole thing. I don't know. I don't really know. I'm just going by what I believe, and I think he and his son Dwayne got together and put that together, did that, and tried to pass it off as real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the world may never know, of course. And I think that this is a story that goes to people who are out there investigating, who are trying to make a difference, who are trying to do all the right things. You know, be sure not to fall into the trap of frustration to where, you know, maybe something did happen, maybe you just saw something, maybe, you know, a lot of people get so frustrated because they're ridiculed and whatever else happens, you know, in their journey, that they feel like in order to set things right, they have to do something to make it appear as if they've caught something. And I know that's happened several times by many people. And the thing here is, it's a learning lesson for people, and it's the old story about cry wolf. Once you've done that, anything else that you present down the pike is not going to be looked upon in a very good light.
As I've always said, and you've heard me say it a million times, there, if you're going to get involved in research into the Sasquatch question, there is one golden rule. One golden rule, thou shalt not hoax, ever, any reason.
And also, you know, be transparent.
Absolutely.
Go into it with the mindset of, okay, if I catch something, these are the things I need to do in order to back up what I'm saying. You know,
yep.
Remaking the incident with people that you know the exact size of, you know, taking measurements, all that stuff that we talked about earlier. Have that in your mindset before you even go out there and know what it is that you need to do in order to, you know, bring your evidence forward. Because especially in this day and age, just bringing forward a clip and saying, look, this is Bigfoot, that's never going to fly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so
and
many people do that in this day and age. And then
be an open
when
and honest of where it happened.
With
and if people want to do backup investigation into a video or a film or whatever you happen to have taken footage of, be open, show people where it happened, let them see it, and then do all the comparisons we've talked about.
Right. Right, and I would also bring forth some investigators that, you know, are well-respected. There's plenty of them out there still. And I would try
Absolutely.
To get those to come into the scene and, you know, have a very very good view of your evidence from the eyes of somebody that's maybe been doing it a lot longer than you, that knows, you know, what to look for as far as evidentiary value if something like that. When you have a creature that's 8 to 10 feet tall, like some people claim, and weighs 600 to 1,000 pounds, and it's walking through the woods, there's going to be some type of evidence left behind. It would be almost impossible for it not to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, reasonable.
So, and just having these YouTube channels and YouTube videos of, you know, filming themselves out there and talking into the camera and, oh my God, I saw a Sasquatch over there. You're not going to believe it. You know, that kind of stuff drives me absolutely batshit crazy. That to me is not evidence.
Any video or photograph. When the subject in question is open to interpretation as evidence, it's just been rendered useless.
Yeah, and I think it's what we need right now is something major, you know? We've been
Absolutely.
Plugging along at this, and my God, I hope I live to see it, that we're able to prove or disprove these things once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
We need a real good, I mean, and again, DNA. Let's talk DNA for a minute. You can bring all the DNA in the world forward, but until they have an actual subject to compare it to, then they say, okay, this is, we know for sure this is a Sasquatch, so this DNA matches that. This is definite DNA Sasquatch. We can't have that. The best thing we'll have is either some unknown primate or some mysterious DNA unknown to science yet, things like that. But that still isn't enough for somebody to claim that that is indeed Sasquatch DNA.
Well, a lot of people, yeah, it's not, because unless there's no Sasquatch to compare it to, it just gets listed as unknown. But those who want it to be so will believe it. What we need is a hunter or a hiker to come in and say, I found this weird jawbone. What is it?
Right, right. Or this weird clump of fur with skin attached to it, or this,
Absolutely.
Know,
or as I said to you in a previous show, Julie, if you ever manage to grab a hunk of hair out of one of the things you want to get examined, for God's sakes, don't say it came from a Sasquatch. Don't even use the word. Just go in and say, hey, I got these weird hairs. You tell me what they are.
Right. Like, so when I'm out at the fire pit and if one of these things grab me and carries me off, I have to remember to grab a handful of that hair in case I somehow survive the being carried off and I can have some type of evidentiary value in my hand.
And don't mention the story. Just say, I got these weird hairs.
Hey, this,
what they
this
are.
Creature carried me offhand, but I didn't get a handful of hair. So But, you know, people, we laugh about it and stuff, but there are a lot of people out there, God bless them, who've had some very horrific encounters with what they believe to be these creatures. And, you know, I would never make light of that. I have friends who have been through some things out in the woods with these, what they believe to be a Bigfoot creature, and they've had to have counseling for it. They have symptoms almost would be considered PTSD after the experience they had. So I would never make light of somebody's story if it truly affects them to that degree. That's not what I'm trying to do here. But I think sometimes we have to keep it in focus.
What I was referring to is you have hair.
Like, Sasquatch exists because we found this DNA and it says it's unknown, so that has to be a Sasquatch.
Yeah, but what I was referring to is if you're handing it in to be examined, who's ever examining it, don't tell them where you think it came from, because they're immediately going to get their wall up. They're going to say, I don't want to touch this. No, I'm not going to.
They're not going to take it serious.
No, just say, come here, you tell me what it is, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are people who I know for a fact who have sent hairs off to independent labs. They don't go around talking about it. They don't go on shows talking about it. They are having these tests done for themselves to rule out certain things. You know, there's several people I know that got their results back saying it's some type of undocumented primate found in America. That kind of raises the eyebrow at that, but still not 100% conclusive. But it's always nice for a person to be able to rule things out for yourself as an investigator.
Absolutely. And for some reason, because of Paul Freeman's personality and the fact he was one hell of a great human being, and he was. It's like I said, if the world was filled with Paul Freemans, the world would be a much better place. But he got, for some reason, unlike other people, he got a lot of publicity, and he was on various programs all the time and stuff like that. And I think the publicity got to him, and he liked being the center of attention. Thus, Ivan Martin.
I understand that.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah,
it's human nature, you know. It's just,
that
subject he filmed.
Yeah,
may have been
doesn't
a Sasquatch. I don't know.
Yeah, no, doesn't affect everybody that way, but it does affect some people that way. And Paul Freeman, in my opinion, just like Ivan Marks, is a prime example of that. Yeah. I mean, I've been on a lot of programs, too, but I don't go around claiming sightings and footprints everywhere, because I've always had the philosophy, stick to the facts and never deviate the facts, and thou shall not hoax.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, this has been a really good show, and I'm sitting out here looking at the storm that's coming our way, and I'll tell you, the good thing about living in the middle of the forest is that you live in the middle of the forest.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's a storm that comes, you have absolutely no internet, because we only have one internet provider that even comes out to where we are, and it's satellite. And the closest tower to my house is 60 miles from the satellite tower. So anytime it rains or it's cloudy, I lose my internet. So we do have a storm coming up, and the skies are getting pretty dark, so we'll probably wrap this up for now so I don't lose connection and get disconnected from the studio, and then the show disappear on us. So I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up for now. But we are trying to get, speaking of hair samples and investigation and analysis, we're working on getting Miss Cindy Dawson onto the show from the Olympic Project. You folks may be familiar with her. She does very good work.
Yes, I know Cindy.
And,
Canadian girl from Vancouver Island. Yep.
Yep. And I believe she's a good friend of yours, isn't she?
We're friends. I wouldn't know good. I don't see her that often because she's on Vancouver Island, and quite frankly, it costs way too much to cross on the ferry back and forth. But, yeah, we know each other, and she does a lot of good work, and she has the ability and the equipment to examine hair samples and give her opinion, yes. And she's a pretty good researcher, and as far as I know, she's basically stick to the facts, every DB of facts, and I like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. She makes a great guest, and we're hoping to get her on for the next show. So y'all stay tuned and check in with us for the next show. Hopefully it'll be Miss Cindy Dosen. So, well, Thomas, thank you. It's been an excellent, wonderful show. I love our chats, and I look forward to the next.
Roger that, my dear. Roger that.
All right, guys, so until we meet again, this is Julie Wrench, host of On the Shoulders of Giants, talking old-timers, and that's O-L, old, not old-timers, with Tom Steinberg.
Good cover-up.
And we thank you for listening, and just to let you know that Monster X Radio is sponsored by Sasquatch Coffee. Have you tried it yet, T? Give us a look on Facebook, Monster X Radio, or Sasquatch Coffee fan page. Gunnar Monson's always having some specials and some good giveaways, so check it out. And we want to thank you all for listening. And I'll talk to you later, Thomas.
Roger that, my dear. Looking forward to it.